Hi, my name's Adam, and it's a real privilege to share some with you today. And to kick it off, I'm going to start with a little game of one-sided guess who with my son Lucas. So let me just pick a card here. Rightio, Lucas. What's your first question?
Are you a boy?
No.
Do you have glasses?
No.
Have you got black hair?
Sort of.
Have you got blue eyes?
No.
Are you wearing earrings?
Can't tell.
Have you got your hair pulled up in a ponytail?
Yes.
Are you Olivia?
Yep, that's right. I'm Olivia. Thanks, mate. Why start with a game of Guess Who like this? Well, last week Hannah shared with us, and she showed us that reading two stories side by side gave us a better idea of what was going on in those stories. The story of Nicodemus and the story of the Samaritan woman at the well. And I wanted to use this little Guess Who example to show you one of the ways that the book of John works. You see, there's four books that tell us about Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And John is the most unique. In fact, it's so different to the other books that they get a special name called the Synoptics, and John sits not in that group. But what's this got to do with anything around Guess Who? Well, you see, what John does for us right at the front is he holds up that card and says, this is who you're looking for. And in this case, it's all these things that he says. He says that in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, it's all creation has come through this one. This one has been, is coming. The true light is going to come into the world, and he's going to bring light and life to the world. He's going to make his dwelling among us, and he's going to be in the flesh, traveling through our story. Right up front, John has gone, this is the person that you're looking for. We've got the inside scoop. As the readers, we've got the inside knowledge. And just like I showed you the card that Lucas was trying to guess, that gave you an inside knowledge of the questions you maybe thought he should be asking. You were able to recognize how well he was going at picking the right person. And this is a crux of what John brings out in chapter 1 of his gospel. He says, this true light is coming into the world, but you know what? The world's not going to recognize him. Only some will recognize this true life, this word. And those people that do recognize him, they're the true children of God. Not born by a husband's will, not born of a bloodline, but born from God. And so when we jump into our story, which is in chapter 9 today, what we're trying to do is see how each of these characters, like Lucas, how well they go at recognizing the Word made flesh amongst them. Like Hannah showed us, it's always good to have some idea of what's been going on before we start into the story we're looking at. And right before chapter 9, Jesus has been in this conversation and this dialogue with the Pharisees about who are the true children of Abraham. So see how this all connects? And it heads into this story. The last thing Jesus has said to them, he was like, Abraham was really excited about this day. When he could see it, he was glad. And the Pharisees are like, this is at the end of chapter 8. The Pharisees are like, you're not even 50. How can you be old enough to know about Abraham? How could you have seen Abraham? And Jesus says, very truly, I tell you, before Abraham was, I am. I am. So he is using this phrase that came out of the burning bush when Moses asked, who are you? And God responded, I am who I am. And this upsets the Pharisees because essentially he's saying, I am God. And so they want to kill him, and Jesus slips away. And that's where our story starts, and Jesus is walking along with his disciples, and his disciples see a blind man on the side of the road, and they say, "Hey, Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus' response is, "Hey, you guys are not seeing this in the right way. I'm going to totally transform how you're seeing this moment." He says, "Neither him nor his parents sinned, but right now I'm going to show you what it's like when the light of the world is right here and with you." After saying this, he spits in the ground, he makes some mud, he puts it in the man's eyes, and he sends the man away to wash. The man goes away and washes, and he comes back. Jesus is no longer on the scene, and he meets his neighbours. And so now in verse 8, we see the neighbours start to go, "Is this the guy that was begging before?" Some say, "Yeah, that was him. Definitely that was him." Others kind of go, I don't know. Is it him?" The blind man's like, yeah, it's me. That was me." And so they say, "Well, how were your eyes opened?" He tells them the story. "That man they called Jesus, he spat and made mud. He put it in my eyes. He sent me to wash. I washed and I could see." And so they say, "Where is this man?" The blind man's like, "Well, I don't know." Right? Like, he was busy washing in the lake, and Jesus has headed off in a different direction. He was blind. Now he can see. And so the neighbors go, "Well, let's take him to the Pharisees to find out." In this moment, John gives us another little snapshot of a deeper level of what's going on here, because this miracle happened on the Sabbath. And so the neighbors bring the blind man to the Pharisees, and they say, "How can you see?" And the blind man answers again, "This man, he put mud on my eyes and he sent me to go and wash." Now, some of the Pharisees get upset with this, right? Because washing and making mud on the Sabbath are not good things to be doing. They break the Sabbath rules. But others are like, "But hang on, if this guy's a sinner, how could he do this miraculous thing?" So they're a bit ummy and ahry at this point. And so they turn to the blind man, and he asks him, "Well, who do you say this guy is?" The blind man kind of says, "A prophet." I don't think we should hear this with a confident, "Oh, I know this man's a prophet." The blind man's starting to try and piece things together. He's kind of going, "If this guy's from God, then surely he's coming with the message of God and he must be a prophet." And the Pharisees don't like this answer. And so they say, "Well, get this man's parents. Maybe we're being tricked here. Maybe this guy's not legit." And so they go and get the man's parents. And they ask the man's parents, "Is this your son? Is he the one that was born blind? How is it that he can now see?" And the parents, they kind of go, "We don't want to get involved here." John tells us that they're worried about getting pushed out of the church, getting pushed out of community, getting pushed out of the standing they have. And so they tell the Pharisees, yep, this is our son. And yep, he was blind. And now he's standing here and he can see. But he's old enough to tell you the story, so why don't you ask him? We don't want to get involved. And so a second time, the Pharisees call the blind man in and they say, "Give glory to God and tell the truth. We know this man Jesus, is a sinner." So you see now the Pharisees are growing in their certainty that Jesus is a sinner, that Jesus is not one from God. The blind man instead is like, "Well, I don't know that. How can I tell whether he's a sinner or not? I mean, he just met this guy earlier in the day." He says, "All I know is that I was blind and now I can see." The blind man just knows that this amazing thing has just happened to me. Again, the Pharisees ask, "Well, what happened that you could see?" The blind man, I think, is getting a little bit tired of their questions. He says, "I've already told you. Why do you want to know more? Do you want to become his disciples too?" We start to see this blind man going, "Well, I don't really know who this guy is, but as soon as you're done with me, I'm about to go and find him because I want to follow and learn from him." But this really upsets the Pharisees and they hurl insults at the blind man. They say, "Are you this fellow's disciples? Well, we're disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses. But as far as for this fellow, we don't even know where he came from." This is a great little thing that John is throwing in here, because remember, just before we got into this story, Jesus has said the exact words to them that God said to Moses in the desert. But right in this moment, they can't see that. The blind man's response is like, this is remarkable what's going on here. You're saying you don't know where he comes from, but you can see he has opened my eyes. We know that God won't listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. And in fact, nobody has ever heard of the eyes of a man born blind being open. If this man was not from God, he could do nothing. And that's the final straw for the Pharisees. They chuck this blind man out. They label him a sinner. How dare you lecture us? And they kick him out. Jesus comes back onto the scene here and he runs into this blind man. And he says to him, do you believe in the Son of Man? Still the blind man is like, who is that? Who's that? I don't know. Tell me who he is so I can believe in him. And Jesus says, you've seen him. In fact, you're looking at him right now. I'm the one speaking with you. And in that moment, the man says, Lord, I believe. And he worships him. He recognizes and says, you are the Messiah. You are the God-man. You are the Word made flesh. Then Jesus says, this is why I've come. There is judgment, that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. This ruffles some of the Pharisees, and he says, are you calling us blind? And Jesus says, if you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty. But because you claim to be able to see, your guilt remains. And after this, Jesus is about to get into another in-depth conversation with the Pharisees, where he continues to say, I am the one that has come from God. I am the Word made flesh. You need to see this. You need to recognize this, because you are saying you can lead the people of God and you can't even see God in your presence. And so this is where the way John's gospel works like this really helps us, because he's asking us, who recognized the Word made flesh? Who recognized the God-man? And we see the disciples. They kind of just kick this whole story off and then they're no longer in the story. And you've got to read the whole Gospel of John to see them on their journey of discovery. But in this story, we see the neighbors. They're kind of not sure what's happened here. But instead of investigating and owning it themselves, they want to palm it off to the Pharisees. We see the man's parents. And the man's parents are more worried about their safety and their security and their standing, that they don't even want to get involved. And we see the Pharisees, who become more and more certain that they know exactly what the Word made flesh, exactly what God would be like, exactly what the Messiah would be like if he was with us. And it closes their eyes to the Messiah in their presence, to Jesus in their presence. And we have the blind man. The blind man spends the whole story going, I don't really know who this guy is, but I do know I couldn't see and now I can. I do know that sounds like God breaking into this world. That sounds like the light of the world. That sounds like life. That sounds like hope. That sounds like the Word made flesh. And when this man meets Jesus, he worships him. And like he said, do you want to be his disciple as well? And so like Hannah said last week, his attitude is that of come and see, come and learn, come and be a part of this great good news that has come upon us. You see, what this story does for us is it asks us to have a big vision of Jesus. It asks us to make a decision. It asks us to let go of the things we want to hold on to that make us safe and secure. It asks us to let go of our certainties and sureties that we would know exactly what the God-man would be like were he here. In fact, when John finishes his gospel, he says, you know what? If they wrote down everything Jesus did, there'd be so many books, there wouldn't be a big enough world to hold them. The Jesus of John is huge. He does these amazing things. He breaks in with light and life and hope. And the posture of this blind man is the posture that John invites us to. I don't know everything, but I know that is light, life, and hope. And if that's where light, life and hope is, then I am going to come and see. I'm going to learn more. And it doesn't matter whether it's day one, like the blind man, or whether it's day 10,000. We can continue to have this same posture where we come and see the Spirit of God, the Spirit of Jesus, what He is doing in the way He is transforming lives around the world. And so my encouragement for you as we head toward Easter is to just again be gripped by this amazing vision of God with us, God dwelling with us, who comes that we may have life, we have life to the full, and that we come and see what that means for us as we journey through our lives. God bless.